the Bush crime family. And we will talk about the brothers and how the associations that they...
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, the Army has extended the combat tours in Iraq of about 4,000 soldiers. They were scheduled to return to their home base in Germany after serving for 12 months. The Los Angeles Times reports today that the Army Chief of Staff has withheld a 2008 budget plan because he says the current level of troop activity in Iraq and around the globe cannot be maintained without billions of dollars in additional funding. In Washington today, several retired military officers criticized Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. They accuse him of incompetence in the Iraq War by sending the troops without the proper equipment and hiding facts from the public. They also say he should be replaced. Also in Washington, congressional Democrats are calling for a new direction in the war on terrorism. This weekend, parts of the National Intelligence Estimate were leaked to the press. It states that the Iraq War has increased global terrorism and Islamic radicalism. However, the White House says this characterization misrepresents the entire report, which has not been released. In Baghdad Sunday, Iraq's political parties reached agreement to prevent the country from splitting up into three regions until at least 2008. In Baghdad today, the new chief judge in Saddam Hussein's genocide trial threw the former Iraqi president out of court. His defense lawyers were already boycotting the court proceedings. In Kandahar, Afghanistan, two gunmen killed the head of the Ministry of Women's Affairs outside of her house. She was a strong advocate of women's rights and education in the southern province, an area where Taliban insurgents have increased their violent attacks. In Castel Gandolfo, Italy, Pope Benedict XVI met with diplomats from 21 Muslim countries to improve relations after his controversial comments about Islam 2 weeks ago. The Pope said that believers of both religions must reject violence and work together. In San Diego, three Camp Pendleton Marines will face courts-martial on murder charges in connection with the death of an Iraqi man from Hamandia in April. In Nepal, a helicopter carrying 24 people crashed this weekend. There were no survivors. The flight had been chartered by the World Wildlife Fund and was carrying diplomats from Nepal and Finland as well as two Americans. In Brussels, the head of the European Union said that after Romania and Bulgaria join, there should be a halt to further expansion. He said the 25-nation bloc could not take in any new member countries unless there were new rules. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business and science are next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The Transportation Security Administration is easing some security rules. Beginning tomorrow, travelers will be allowed to carry on 3-ounce travel-size containers of toiletries, which must be placed in clear zip-top plastic bags. Also, drinks and other items that are purchased in secure areas of the airport can be brought on the plane. The top 100 mother-friendly places to work, according to Working Mother magazine, include Abbott Laboratories, Ernst & Young, IBM, and J.P. Morgan Chase. In Paris later this week, the head of Nissan and Renault will meet with the CEO of General Motors for talks on a possible three-way alliance. Toyota Motors reports that in August, its global production rose more than 17%. It's the 22nd straight monthly gain for the Japanese automaker. Toyota credits an increase in sales of fuel-efficient cars such as the Prius, Corolla, and Camry. Honda announced some improvements in its energy-friendly cars. For example, its new fuel cell car, which will be available in the U.S. and Japan in 2008, now has a driving range of more than 350 miles. According to the Lundberg survey, in the past 2 weeks, gasoline prices nationwide have decreased nearly 24 cents a gallon. It's the third consecutive drop since prices peaked in the middle of August. Light sweet crude settled at $61.23 a barrel today, and near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow is up 68 points, the Nasdaq up 30, the S&P 500 up 12. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, me's right. Today's Tom Sawyer, me's right. Though his mind is not for him, so put him down to there again. If he's ever
right, it's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
Good afternoon and welcome. The Bruce Birch Radio Program. It's about 6 minutes after the hour here in the eastern coast of the United States. Glad to be back with you. Boy, I really went through the ringer last week. I had the flu, and I struggled through a couple of broadcasts middle of the week. And, I took Friday off because I needed to rest and sort of get my head back together and get my health back in shape, and was able to do that, and went up to the mountainous country of West Virginia, and went to the West Virginia Democratic Party Jefferson Jackson Day dinner there, where I had the opportunity to hear a number of speeches from the congressional delegation of West Virginia to the U.S. Congress and to the U.S. Senate, a number of local folks, and had the opportunity to shake Robert Byrd's hand as well as Barack Obama. That was kind of a cool thing. Okay. Anyway, we're going to get on with some of the program. If you want to get in on the show today, you can dial 1-877-443-2366, and you can also send me email to bruce@brucebirch.com. That comes roaring into there. And let's see, anything else? Oh, yes, we are chatting in the Head On Radio Network chat room. If you want to get in on that, you can go there. I've got a number of different things going on today with the program, but the first thing I wanted to get off on the right foot, I guess you could say, on the left foot. That is that apparently recently a troubadour of the labor union, Joe Glazer, passed away. He was a well-known singer-songwriter within the union movement. And if you want to know more about him, you can go to, very simply, just Google Joe Glazer. I'm going to read this. This was sent from the AFS-CME Local 2910 President Saul Schneiderman. This is a tribute to Joe Glazer. During the Great Depression, Joe Glazer learned how to play the guitar from an out-of-work musician on the Works Progress Administration. In 1944, he began writing songs for textile workers, and from 1944 to 1950, Joe served as Assistant Education Director for the Textile Workers of America, where he wrote, "The Mill Was Made of Marble." In 1951, he started work with the rubber workers, where he continued to play and sing and write songs such as one called Too Old to Work. Over the years, he had written over 100 labor and protest songs. He had performed at union conventions, rallies, and on picket lines too numerous to mention. He sang at the historic merger of the AFL and CIO. He sang at Walter Reuther's funeral. He sang at the United Mine Workers of America conventions in 1964 and 1968, where he called John Henry Blair the infamous anti-union sheriff, mentioned in the song, Which Side Are You On? He called him a no-good SOB. Of the coal miners, Joe said, I like singing for the miners because of their solidarity and tradition. Those two very powerful words, solidarity and tradition, define his life and work. In many ways, Joe followed in the steps of George Corson, the post-World War II folklorist of the coal miners. In 1973, he wrote Songs of Work and Protest with Edith Falk, one of the most significant labor history songbooks ever written. Joe founded and directed Collector Records, which over the last 30 years has distributed over 30,000 sound recordings featuring the songs of steel workers, textile workers, public employees, miners, teachers, and other occupations. Archie Green, America's leading folklorist, said most of Joe's songs have been union songs, which of course distinguishes his work. Pete Seeger praised Joe for not letting people forget the great union songs. Joe passed away recently, and on September the 19th, I believe. And I wanted to read this. This is out of one of his songs called From the Mill Was Made of Marble. And he writes, I dreamed that I'd died and gone to my reward, a job in Heaven's textile plant on a golden boulevard. The mill was made of marble, the machines were made of gold, and no one ever got tired and no one ever grew old. Rest in peace, Joe Glazer. Troubadour of the labor movement, 1918 to 2006. It's important, I believe, that we look at our history. We look at the history of the labor movement and honor those folks who came along and tried to rally the cause. And, you know, oftentimes, as in the anti-war movement of the 60s and the early 70s, music is what brings people together and helps them to express themselves in such a way that they feel united. And, you know, with this gentleman, Joe Glazer, you know, I can't help but say that this is exactly the same situation with the labor movement. They needed a troubadour. They got one in Joe Glazer. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll get on into the rest of the radio program. This is the Bruce Birch radio program on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get into the show today, please dial 1-877-443-2366. I'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
We look to the day when you can live in freedom, and America and Iran can be good friends and close partners in the cause of peace.
See, this is where we get a really bad reputation. I live in a country where I'm not even sure if my vote's going to count in November. How free are you? How free are the people on the Gulf Coast? How free are the families that still grieve for the bodies dragged out of Aracoma and Sago? How free are they? He throws around precious terms with precious little regard for them. How free are we that chose by a wide margin in the year 2000, November 2000, we chose a man named Al Gore to be the President of the United States? How free are we that we were saddled with this ignorant, ignorant, hateful little man? How free are we? How free?
I'm Bob Kincaid. Join me weeknights, 7 to 10 Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
Nah?
Nah. You just got to find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4 and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers so that becomes an 8, too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy.
Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. Glad to be back with you. Got a couple of stories I wanted to bring to your attention this afternoon. One of them in particular, and we'll get to some of this, some of the false reality that the right is trying to cook up on the internet. They're scared to death of the blogs, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. According to Raw Story at rawstory.com, three senior military officers, all retired, will harshly, today harshly criticize the administration's conduct of the war in Iraq to members of the United States Senate. Retired Major General Paul Eaton apparently told lawmakers that Rumsfeld is incompetent strategically, operationally, and tactically. I'll repeat that. He said he is incompetent strategically, operationally, and tactically. I'm trying to think of any other way that he could be incompetent, and it's not coming to mind. John R.S. Batiste, another retired Army general, he planned to deliver the most startling testimony, in which he described his reasons for leaving after 31 years of service. He says, quote, I walked away from promotion and a promising future serving our country. I hung up my uniform because I came to the gut-wrenching realization that I could do no more good for my soldiers and their families out of uniform. Excuse me. Let me rephrase that. I could do more good for my soldiers and their families out of uniform. He went on, Donald Rumsfeld is not a competent wartime leader. He knows everything except, quote, how to win, end quote. He surrounds himself with like-minded and compliant subordinates who do not grasp the importance of the principles of war, the complexities of Iraq, or the human dimension of warfare. Secretary Rumsfeld ignored 12 years of U.S. Central Command deliberate planning and strategy, dismissed honest dissent, and browbeat subordinates to build his plan, which did not address the hard work to crush the insurgency, secure a post-Saddam Iraq, build the peace, and set Iraq up for self-reliance. So there you go. That's two of three ex-generals who had some serious things to say about old Rumskull. I think it's important. These guys come out and tell the truth. I mean, you know, we could dismiss one or two generals, but I don't know how many it is at this point. Ex-officers who have come out and said that this guy's a complete moron. Let's go to the phones. We're going to go to Jim on line one. Jim, how are you doing this afternoon?
How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling okay. I'm a little bit hoarse, but other than that, I'm all right.
I understand that. I'm glad you enjoyed the dinner here the other night or in Charleston. And
it was great fun.
I thought that Mr. Obama gave a great speech, and I thought the thrust of his message was somewhat, I'm going to use the word ecumenical, okay, all-encompassing, and I think that's what we need to do, and that's going to be the key to democratic success, and, you know, I think we all need to pull together, and we all need to try to gather as many people as we possibly can into the Democratic fold between now and the 7th of November, and try not to alienate anyone if we possibly can, and I think that's what Mr. Obama was trying to say. And as far as Mr. Rumsfeld is concerned, the man should have been terminated or released from his employment 3 years ago, 4 years ago. If you're not thinking like he thinks, or if you're not in the inner circle in the Pentagon that pursues his doctrine, you're out, and your career is over. And what General Batiste said today was exactly the case. I mean, we have parallels in history, Bruce, that illustrate what happens when incompetent leaders can override military technical skills. Look at Adolf Hitler, for example. If he had listened to his generals, particularly in the Eastern campaign, the war would not have gone so badly for him as it did. Now, in the other case, when Hitler invaded the West, his generals were very timid, and it was Hitler who really was responsible for the success in the West, but not in the East. But the whole thing ended in a disaster, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
And basically, when the long-term history historical approach is reviewed, you have a person like Adolf Hitler overriding his generals and not listening to military technocrats who knew what they were doing and being, you know, totally imaginary in their goals and expectations, which I think Rumsfeld has done. And that is regrettable. And any other corporation would have fired his sorry ass a long time ago.
Well, you know, there's this unwritten rule in the Bush administration, the worse you do, the higher you go. So maybe he's bucking for vice president or something.
No, he's just a guy who's there because he thinks he has an ego the size of the building that he commands, okay? His ego is as big as the Ronald Reagan Federal Building at Federal Triangle and the Pentagon. They're the two largest buildings in the district. And that's just Donald Rumsfeld. And unfortunately, his stupidity and his lack of ability to listen to people like General Shinseki initially, who told him, look, you don't have the manpower to do this. You don't have a proper exit strategy. He just won't listen. He's very closed-minded that way. And when you disagree with him, he can be very ugly and very hateful. And then he's extremely vengeful. And he will terminate the career of any general officer he can who steps in his path. And you've got these guys with all the stars on their shoulders, as many stars as are in the heavens, but yet this one man, because he has Bush's approval, can simply make them step aside and say, yes, sir. Now, I believe in the military should obey the supreme head, which is a civilian, but in the case of a civilian, this civilian's got to go. I mean, he is just a bad egg, and he's had a history of problems ever since I can remember. But you've got people like Bush and Cheney who support him. And unfortunately, they're the real problem because they're the ones who basically write his job performance and they keep him in his position. But he needs to get out of that office and he needs to go home. And that's the.
Yeah, it's time for him to go back to wherever it is he came from. Where is he from anyway, Jim? Do you know?
I don't know where the man's from, but I'll tell you one thing. I know where I'd like to send him. And, you know, another thing, you were talking about the labor movement. Now, Bruce, nobody is as compassionate with labor as I am, and I believe that man should be given a living wage for the work that they do. But there's some people who think that if you solve the labor problem in this country, all the other problems will go away. Well, that's just not true. There is no panacea. There is no silver bullet. Labor is only one of the problems, and you know, you've got to have a balance between management and labor. You know what I'm saying? You can't have one without the other. They have a symbiotic existence between one another. And when one becomes, you know, you can't have one overwhelming the other. They've got to work together. And I think labor unions, to a certain extent, are wonderful and great. But then to a certain other extent, they can harm as well as help. Okay? And that's one point. That's something I've been wanting to say for an awfully long time.
Well, you know, I think that the entire idea of bringing of having a labor union is to level that playing field between the worker and the employer, and you know, yeah, they have to work together because they have to come to a compromise so that everyone is able to make what they need to make. And
and
you know what really kills me though, Jim, is these runaway profits with these companies.
But you can't have labor pricing yourself out of the market and sending companies overseas either. That's not going to help you any. You can't kill the goose that lays the golden egg. That's
well,
my
that's
point.
True.
That is true, and that is an irrefutable truth.
But with trade policies the way they are right now, that's exactly what happens.
Well,
and there's really not, you know.
I don't know. Well, I think we know where NAFTA and CAFTA came from. They became SHAFTA. And that's not a good thing either. But
what those two policies were intended to break up the labor union movement here.
Yeah, right. And those were not good things to do. And I think that they tried to undo the work of a lot of good work that's been done. But like I say, labor is not the only problem that's in this country. And just as long as the labor problem is solved, all our problems are not going to go away. That is not a panacea. That's the crux of my argument this afternoon, or not argument, the point I'm just trying to make, okay?
Okay. Well, I appreciate
it. If I possibly can. But anyway, I'm glad you made the dinner. I thought the speech was good, and the spirit was good, and it seems as though that the Democrats are energized, and I hope that continues. And I trust you heard what Falwell said about Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, he sounded kind of like Hugo Chavez there a little bit, didn't he?
Well, he was making comments about her being Lucifer and this, that, and the other. And then he had to backtrack and say, well, I didn't mean what I said. And, you know, people who do stuff like that, of course he meant what he said. You know, he definitely said that, and he was trying to, he realized he had his butt in the crack, and he was causing some problems. And I'm hoping we're going to see a crack in that type of coalition that some of these false prophets have tried to create. And I hope we'll see some people, at least moderates and independents, coming over to our side on the 7th, where we can all work together on the spirit of one thing, and it's equal to the spirit of what you say democracy is. And we're talking about compromise, okay? That's an important word. Without compromise, you can't have democracy.
I agree, and we need to. We can have those all those debates later. Right now, what's most important is saving the nation.
We need to get in there on November 7th. I know I will vote tomorrow by absentee, and I will hit a straight D.
Right on.
So that's what I'm going to do. I realize what I'm saying this afternoon might ruffle some feathers of people, but nonetheless, my heart's in the right place, and I think you know that. And the most important way is how you vote.
And that you do vote.
And that's how I will vote. I don't mind telling anybody that I will not vote for any Republicans. It'll be straight Democrat all the way. And I wish it could be another way because there's some good Republicans out there. But right now, we're just going to have to toe the party line.
I think. Thank you, Jim.
All right, buddy. Have a good day. Hope your throat's better now.
Well, it's getting there. Thanks a lot, man. That's our good friend Jim from an undisclosed location somewhere in the northern hemisphere. It's about 30 minutes past the hour. We're going to go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we'll cover some more stuff here on the Bruce Birch Radio program where you may not get smarter, but you'll know more. I'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also listen to over at progressive.org. Jerry Falwell was back at it again over the weekend at the Values Voter Summit held by Christian conservatives. Falwell came out for Hillary Clinton. I certainly hope that Hillary is the candidate, he said, according to the LA Times, which had him on tape. Nothing will energize my constituency like Hillary Clinton. If Lucifer ran, he won it. Falwell added. Nice touch that, especially given the fact that a lot of the far-right evangelicals already believe that Hillary is the devil herself. Falwell's Hillary endorsement confirms something I've been thinking for a long time. She's a godsend for the far-right, if you'll excuse the expression. She'll help them raise scads of money and get out the reactionary vote, and while she may be able to win the Democratic nomination, it will be extremely difficult for her to prevail in the general. Her negatives are just too high. Plus, given the vehemence of the crazies on the right, I worry about Hillary's safety. Molly Ivins once told me she thinks Hillary would be assassinated if she ran. If that hideous outcome came to pass, all those like Falwell, who compared her to the devil, would have that on their conscience if they have one. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We look to the day when you can live in freedom, and America and Iran can be good friends and close partners in the cause of peace.
See, this is where we get a really bad reputation. I live in a country where I'm not even sure if my vote's going to count in November. How free are you? How free are the people on the Gulf Coast? How free are the families that still grieve for the bodies dragged out of Aracoma and Sago? How free are they? He throws around precious terms with precious little regard for them. How free are we that chose by a wide margin in the year 2000, November 2000, we chose a man named Al Gore to be the president of the United States. How free are we that we were saddled with this ignorant, ignorant, hateful little man? How free are we? How free?
I'm Bob Kincaid. Join me weeknights, 7 to 10 Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Burst Radio program. It's about 35 minutes past the hour here on the Head On Radio Network, also being simulcast on radiopower.org. Glad to have you back along for the ride this afternoon. Now, I've got a number of other little odds and ends that I want to cover, the first of which, of course, if you want to get in on the show today, before I get into that, if you want to get in on the show today, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. And that'll get you into the studios of the Head On Radio Network, where they'll route your call to me. The October 2nd, 2006 issue of Newsweek, apparently, the U.S. edition is going to feature a very radically different cover from its international counterparts. Apparently, the cover of the international editions of Newsweek for the October 2nd issue, aimed at Europe, Asia, and Latin America, displays in large letters the title, quote, Losing Afghanistan, along with an arresting photograph of an armed jihadi. The cover of the United States edition, in contrast, apparently is dedicated to celebrity photographer Annie Leibovitz, and is demurely captioned, My Life in Pictures. The international cover story begins, quote, You don't have to drive very far from Kabul these days to find the Taliban. In Ghazni province's Andar district, just over a two-hour trip from the capital on the main southern highway, a thin young man dressed in brown and wearing a white prayer cap stands by the roadside waiting for two Newsweek correspondents. It is midday on the central Afghan plains, far from the jihadist-infested mountains to the east and west. Without speaking, the sentinel guides his visitors along a sandy horse trail toward a mud brick village within sight of the highway. As they get closer, a young Taliban fighter wearing a walkie-talkie and an AK-47 rifle pops out from behind a tree. He is manning an improvised explosive device, he explains, in case Afghan or U.S. troops try to enter the village. Now, the U.S. story begins. The U.S. cover story begins. Annie Leibovitz is tired and nursing a cold, and she's just flown back to New York on the red eye from L.A., where she spent 2 days shooting Angelina Jolie for Vogue. Like so many of her photo sessions, there was nothing simple about it. Quote, I talked with Angelina before the shoot. She felt like she was coming back from having the baby, and she felt very sexy and ready to go. Okay, anybody want to puke yet? I'm thinking that it might be time. The story aimed at the United States then goes on to discuss the difficulties Leibovitz had in photographing Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes' infant. The international story continues with difficulties of a very different kind. Quote, in Ghazni and in six provinces to the south and in two other hot spots to the east, Karzai's government barely exists outside district towns. Hardcore Taliban forces have filled the void by infiltrating from the relatively lawless tribal areas of Pakistan where they had fled at the end of 2001. And it goes on, and it goes on. And why? Why would Newsweek scrub this story from their U.S. edition? Anybody care to guess? You can give me a call, 1-877-443-2366. You can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com, and you know what? You want to talk about it, we can talk about it. Another interesting little story. Now, you know, I'm not going to venture forth any kind of conjecture as to why they would want to wipe out a story that makes the United States look bad from the United States edition. Why would I want to do that? I must hate America, right? I must hate America. Well, let me just tell you something. I was listening, you know, I had to go pick up my daughter from school today. And as I was sitting there in the line of cars waiting for her to get out of school, I flipped through the radio dial and zip, 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 flipped through the radio dial and landed, guess who? Flush. I landed on Flush. And Flush was doing his, you know, I think I listened to him once about 3 or 4 years ago, and swore him off at that point. But today I was flipping through and I landed on his show and I went, oh, let me just listen to this moron for a minute. And just let me just see if it's any different from the last time I listened to it. It absolutely wasn't. Because what he was talking about today, again, was Bill Clinton. I'm going, dude, 6 years later, and he still is blaming Clinton for, you know, I think he's blaming Clinton for his addiction. I don't know. At any rate, he was talking about the whole Fox Clinton tussle thing that went on. And apparently, you know, and then he said this, and this really blew my mind because I thought, here's a complete disconnect with reality. Complete disconnect with reality. He said, the Democrats are like that. The Democrats are always looking backward. They're never looking forward like us Republicans. We look forward, they look backward. They're always looking to the past. They're always looking to the past. And I thought, okay, you just went on a 15-minute tirade about a president that hasn't been in power for 6 years. And you want to say we look backwards? And we always look to the past? what a moron. What a moron. And, you know, and the other part of that, too, is that he had to go through and do all the name-calling that he does. Sandy Bergler and all this other stuff. You know, but I listened to it for a little while, and I finally had to change the station because, honest to God, it just really was making me upset. I thought, you know, if this guy can get away with this, I could probably go on the air and claim that George Bush is having sex with Condi Rice and get away with it. Because after all, he's one who called Bill Clinton a racist, right? Not a racist, a rapist, excuse me. Probably called him that too, I would imagine. He's called him about everything he can. At any rate, I just wanted to point that out to you that, in 3 solid years, nothing's changed on that radio program. So you don't have to go check it out. I did it for you. Mel Gibson is back in the news today. I had to mention this because I'm sure our friend David from Maine will probably bite this and call. He's returned to the spotlight to promote his upcoming movie called Apocalypto and to criticize the war in Iraq. Believe this. Almost 2 months after he railed against Jews when he was arrested for drunk driving in Malibu, the actor made a surprise appearance Friday at Fantastic Fest, an event in Austin, Texas, devoted to new science fiction, horror, and fantasy films. He presented a work-in-progress screening of his Mayan adventure tale, and then he took questions. About one-third of the full house gathered for the film gave him a standing ovation. Yes, that's the one-third that votes for George Bush. In describing its portrait of a civilization in decline, Gibson said, the precursors to a civilization that's going under are the same time and time again, drawing parallels between the Mayan civilization on the brink of collapse and America's present situation. Quote, he said, quote, what's human sacrifice if not sending guys off to Iraq for no reason, end quote. I suppose that Mel may be trying to play up to the liberals a little bit after he, you know, went on this tirade against how the Jews were doing everything to mess up the entire planet. And moving from one bigot to another, apparently George Allen not only has he likes to call people of color monkeys, slang monkey words, but he also apparently in college was, you know, an unabashed racist. Liked to use the N-word a lot, he did, there at the University of Virginia. He hung Confederate flags on his wall. This guy, you know, complete moron. Another one. Complete bigoted moron. Racist bastard. All right. Let's go straight over to the phones. We've got Dave from Eureka, California. Dave, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing well, Bruce. I'm good to hear that you are, too, better.
Yeah.
I was wanting to pursue some of the thoughts offered by your previous caller there, Jim, who I thought made some excellent points, but I fear that this is not just in a matter of incompetence, that there is a plan, it was spelled out in the earliest days of this PNAC, where these same, neocons, these Carlyle group characters, they had a plan, and that was to take over control of the oil assets of the Middle East. And they laid it out. And so while there is, it's incompetently managed, their purpose is being accomplished. That is to say, they have taken control of the oil of Iraq and of Afghanistan, and they fully plan to do so in Iran as soon as they can find an excuse to get in. So they're on track with their goal, and they bungle it. They don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to really make it look like it's something credible, but there is nothing noble whatsoever, as I see it, about our ventures in the Middle East at all. We're there with a goal of pure greed, some new plan for global domination, some new plan for a new world order, meaning shifting all the wealth from working classes around the world, certainly in the United States, to the very top, smallest percentage of very wealthy people. That was my thought.
Well, you're absolutely right. I find no fault with your reasoning, David.
Yeah, because I think some people, and you can feel dreadful thoughts about them for their bungling and their incompetence and just stupidly bringing us into a war without a purpose. That would be bad. But they had a purpose, and they're there, and they're on target with it. And that's worse. These are psychopaths that have stolen our government, Bruce. So I feel the need to call wherever I hear it and share that and get people to realize that we have to see the reality of what we're up against. Hardcore criminals have stolen our government. That's my opinion.
All right.
Wish it were happier.
And I think, David, as a quick comment, I also think that, they want to have organized chaos over there because the longer that they stay there, the more money they can loot out of the Treasury.
Yeah. They are doing just that. The Treasury of the United States is ending up in the pockets of the Bechtels and the Carlyle groups and General Electric and that little PNAC crowd under the pretext that they're doing some noble thing, bringing freedom to people that, bringing democracy. No. No noble purpose. It's a pure greed thing that's driving these group of cons. Love your program, Bruce.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay, you too. Thanks, Dave. That's our friend Dave from Eureka, California. Let's go straight over to Diana from Washington on line two. Diana, how are you doing this afternoon?
Well, hi, Bruce. I've never spoken with you before.
Glad to have you on the show.
I heard last week you had a cold.
I did indeed. I'm still sort of getting my throat is still a little hoarse from all the coughing, but I'm well over the other side of it, feeling much, much better.
Well, I wonder if you got it from Mike Malloy, because I was over on his website this morning, and it looks like his whole family's got a cold. And I hope he's doing better, too, if he's listening, because we miss him out here, like, super bad. In fact, that's why I turned on, Head On Radio?
Uh-huh.
I heard that his shows were over there. Or saw that they were over at your place. But anyhow, I'm not very good at this, but when I heard that guy named Jim, so I actually wrote down his name last week because I thought he was a pretty smart dude. But when he started attacking unions, I was really PO'd because I'm somebody who has a history of, I'm an FDR type Democrat, but I was born way after that. But my parents grew up during the Depression, and if it wasn't for labor unions, this country would be in a lot of deep doo-doo. And now that we're down to like anywhere from 7 to 11% of workers who are union, I don't know how Jim can attack union workers for asking for more of their share. We're not even part of, I'm not in a union, but my dad was in the Ironworkers Union, and if it wasn't for his union, my mother, and he's passed away, but she wouldn't have the health care she has that the union can give her. Plus, the union has done so much for this country. I had to get on here and stand up for unions because they're the thing that has saved this country, along with Franklin Roosevelt and liberals and Democrats. And also, the guy who was just on, Dave, talking about PNAC, the Project for a New American Century. I mean, we all have heard about this PNAC, the people who listen and care, but we've got to get out there and march and get angry about this. And this is the thing I liked about Mike Malloy, and I liked about you, and about Bill, I think his name is.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bill.
I'm embarrassed. I forgot you guys' names because I've got my screen's blacked out now. But I really.
You're fine. We're glad you're listening, and we're glad that you're new to the network. And and it's okay to forget our names. I mean, just stick around.
Well, you know what, Bruce? I heard that the is it the Millwrights and Carpenters Union that support your station?
Yes, they do.
Well, I want to put in a word for the unions because, Jim, I don't know what you did for a living. It sounds like you were kind of military-affiliated, and maybe I'm wrong. But, I mean, the military is kind of run like a union in a way because you got the workers and you got the management. But the management has to work with the workers in the military because the military, the guys have guns, and they could do a mutiny. But the union laborers, all they've been doing is getting screwed by having corporations go overseas and have those goods, which don't drop in price, by the way. You know, they're getting these huge windfall profits from not, you go into any store, like, I'm going to say this name, Nordstrom. They had all these wonderful shoes made in this country, and then they went and bought, had them all made in China, and they kept the prices up high. I mean, where's the ethics in that? Where's the business? I took an economics class my first year in college, and they were supposed to have what they call an ethical profit, or a not an obscene profit, which is what that was. So I know I'm going all over the place, but basically I'm saying is management is not fair to unions, and so we've got to take back this country with unions. And I'm really proud that my dad was a union member.
And as well you should be. I think, Diana, you know, the great American middle class was created by unions.
You're darn right.
And, you know, and this current administration, I think it probably started back with, maybe even back with Nixon, was the undoing of the union movement. And ending up with where we are today with NAFTA and CAFTA and all of these trade agreements that have basically gutted any protections that the unions ever had, so that, you know, manufacturers can relocate overseas, you know, and make goods much, much cheaper. And as a result, I know here in North Carolina, where I am, for instance, the textile industry was completely gutted. And now it's the auto industry that's next, you know, and they're just trying to do everything they can to get rid of these union members so that they can rake in more profits on the back of the of sweatshop workers in China and Korea and wherever else they can put their plants.
Well, I was in the as a gift to my dad. I went and marched in the thing against the World Trade Organization, the WTO thing here in Seattle back in 99, and I walked with the union, even though I'm not a union member, and it was like 50,000 people in that WTO rally that sort of showed the World Trade Organization that we're not going to take it anymore. You know, the average people in the world, not just in this country, but around the world, there were people from around the world at that march. And Dennis Kucinich was there, by the way, and so was Sherrod Brown. You know who Sherrod Brown is? He's running
in Ohio
for the Senate.
Uh-huh.
And these two guys are good guys. And another thing I just wanted to say, and I know I'm not supposed to take that much time, but I saw the thing about George Allen, and I always had a feeling about that guy, that he was a racist.
I mean, you know, he had a noose in his office for a long. I don't know if it's still there, but he had a noose hanging from the wall in his office in the Senate.
I couldn't believe that till I saw it on Salon today. That at his home he had a Confederate flag, something I read yesterday or the day before that he had a hanging noose. I couldn't believe that. You read that too, huh?
Oh yeah. I'm originally from Virginia, so I try to stay up on the politics there. A lot of my family still lives there, and you know, and I just couldn't believe, you know, he was the governor actually of Virginia before he became a senator, and so they, you know, all this stuff is coming out now. I'm glad it's coming out now, but I wish it had come out about 16 years ago.
Yeah, and you wonder about anybody in the South who is a Republican. How do they get there except for being racist? I mean, Mike Malloy talks about the South, and I haven't been there before, but I live in the Northwest, and you don't see a lot of stuff like that up here. But anyhow, I don't want to stay on the phone. I know there's better callers, but I just want to thank you guys for being there, because and October 5th is the World Can't Wait March. So if anybody is thinking about marching against Bush and getting out there and getting your anger on into your feet, get out there and march against Bush on October 5th. Okay?
And absolutely. And Diana, thank you so much for the call, and it's great to hear from you. Don't be a stranger, okay?
Okay, and gargle with lemon and honey, and you'll feel a little better.
You know what I'm doing? Actually, is I'm doing some tea with honey, just like some regular black tea. But I'll try that.
Okay, have a good one, and hang in there, everybody, because we'll get rid of these creeps.
That's
Bye.
Right. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Diana. That was Diana, brand new caller from Washington State. I love to hear someone stand up for the unions, and you know what? She had a great point. The point is, ladies and gentlemen, is that, you know, the unions, if we really want to look back at our history, the advent of the union movement, the labor movement in the United States, of course it was paved with much blood. And those people were fighting to create a new class of working people who, you know, had some of the amenities of the upper class, who were able to make a living wage, to send their kids to college, to be able to pay their mortgage, to be able to buy a couple of cars, to be able to live in a fairly comfortable way. And, you know, the American middle class was created out of the blood of Joe Hill, out of the blood and the songs of people like Joe Glazer, Studs Terkel. You know, and the reality of that is, the problem, or I should say, is that, you know, these the corporatists who have taken over our government, and several before them, including Bill Clinton, created laws that basically have laid siege to the union movement. The AFL-CIO, at one, you know, I want to get some numbers for you when I come back from the break. I'll give you some numbers about the height of the union movement and where it stands today. The bottom line is that the unions aren't in decline right now because there's no teeth to force management's hand. If the company is big enough, all it has to do is pull up stakes and relocate. And a lot of them have done that. Now, the smaller companies, the service industries, et cetera, hotels, stuff like, you know, the Service Employees International Union is seeing a little, you know, is seeing their membership remain fairly steady. The other thing that is sort of nailing the union movement right now is unskilled labor coming in to do jobs that skilled labor used to have to do. We'll talk about that some on another show this week, actually. I have another topic scheduled dealing with immigration later on this week. Anyway, this is the Bruce Burch Radio Program. Yeah, it's a great call. Thank you, Diana, for joining us. I hope you stay and stick around. We'd love to have you around. If you want to get in on the show today, you too can avail yourself of that opportunity. 1-877-443-2366 is the number. And you can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. I'll be right back after the top of the hour news. Living in a shotgun shack. When you may find yourself.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, congressional Democrats are calling for a new direction in the war on terrorism. This weekend, parts of the National Intelligence Estimate were leaked to the press. It states that the Iraq war has increased global terrorism and Islamic radicalism. However, the White House says this characterization misrepresents the entire report, which has not been released. In Washington, the Army has extended the combat tours in Iraq of about 4,000 soldiers. This is the second time combat tours for soldiers have been extended beyond the 12-month period that had been promised. There are currently 142,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. About 120,000 are U.S. Army soldiers. The Los Angeles Times reports today that the Army Chief of Staff has withheld a 2008 budget plan because he says the current level of troop activity in Iraq and around the globe cannot be maintained without billions of dollars in additional funding. In Washington today, several retired military officers criticized Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. They accuse him of incompetence in the war in Iraq by sending the troops without the proper equipment and hiding facts from the public. They also say he should be replaced. In San Diego, three Camp Pendleton Marines will face courts martial on murder charges in connection with the death of an Iraqi man from Hamdaniya in April. In Baghdad today, the new chief judge in Saddam Hussein's genocide trial threw the former Iraqi president out of court. His defense lawyers were already boycotting the court proceedings. Also in Iraq today, British troops report that they killed a top al-Qaeda leader in Basra who had escaped from a U.S. prison in Afghanistan last year. In Kandahar, Afghanistan, two gunmen killed the head of the Ministry of Women's Affairs outside of her house. She was a strong advocate of women's rights and education in the southern province, an area where Taliban insurgents have increased their violent attacks. In Castel Gandolfo, Italy, Pope Benedict XVI met with diplomats from 22 Muslim countries to improve relations after his controversial comments about Islam 2 weeks ago. The Pope said that believers of both religions must reject violence and work together. The Transportation Security Administration is easing some security rules about what can be brought on board airlines. Beginning tomorrow, travelers will be allowed to carry on 3-ounce travel-size containers of toiletries, which must be placed in clear zip-top plastic bags. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
In New York, a federal judge ruled that tens of millions of light cigarette smokers can go forward with a class action lawsuit. It could cost the tobacco companies as much as $200 billion. Two Hewlett-Packard executives have been subpoenaed in the media leak scandal. They will testify Thursday before the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee. For the fifth month in a row, existing home sales fell. Also in August, the median price for an existing home sold fell to $225,000. That's the first drop in 11 years. A German magazine reports that Daimler Chrysler is considering selling a small Chinese-made fuel-efficient car in the U.S. under the Dodge brand name. Toyota reports that in August, its global production rose more than 17%. It's the 22nd straight monthly gain for the Japanese automaker. In Paris later this week, the head of Nissan and Renault will meet with the CEO of General Motors for talks on a possible three-way alliance. According to the Lundberg survey, in the past 2 weeks, gasoline prices nationwide have decreased nearly 24 cents a gallon. The average price for a gallon of self-serve regular unleaded gas is now $2.42. Light sweet crude settled at $61.45 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange today. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 68 points. The NASDAQ was up 30 points. The S&P 500 was up 12. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
It's time for another hour of Conversation Radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour here on the second hour of the radio program. Glad to be back with you. Now, you know, we were talking a little bit back in the first hour about some union stuff. Now, I started off the show sharing with you the fact that Joe Glazer passed away, who is a troubadour of sorts, a union musician who, he wasn't a union musician as in a musician who was in the union. He was a singer-songwriter who was a member of the union who wrote a lot of union tunes, and he passed away on the 19th. He lived a good long life. So, and then that followed up with several phone calls related to the union, including the last one, Diana from Washington, who stood up for the unions today. Thank you, Diana, for that call. Moving right along. I shared a little bit something about the George Allen thing. Yeah, his former college football teammates are coming out and saying the man is a racist, to use the N-word a lot, and I'm hoping this will derail his Senate campaign. Jim Webb is running for Senate, former official in the Reagan administration, changed his party affiliation to run as a Democrat in Virginia. Fantastic on Jim Webb. Now he knows where the real meat is found in politics. It's not on the right side, folks. Was also mentioned earlier in the program that Jerry Falwell came out, this is from the Religious Corruption Watch. The Reverend Jerry Falwell says that an earlier comparison he made between Senator Hillary Clinton and Lucifer was a joke. During the, quote, Value Voters Conference, end quote, Falwell had said, "I certainly hope that Hillary is the candidate. I hope that she's the candidate because nothing will energize my constituency like Hillary Clinton. If Lucifer ran, he wouldn't." Now, of course, in a phone interview with the Associated Press, Falwell played down his inflammatory comment. Falwell said, quote, "The statement about she would be a better candidate than Lucifer was totally tongue-in-cheek and totally meant as a joke, and everybody knew in the building and laughed accordingly." Senator Clinton may doubt the sincerity of the Falwell claim that his comments were a joke. Clinton's press secretary says, "A new low has been reached in demonizing political opponents." And yet, the man is not under IRS investigation yet? Well, we know why, don't we? Along those lines today, there's a different story I wanted to bring to your attention. To start with, apparently Iran. Now, over the weekend, Dr. Bill and I, when we went to West Virginia, actually he lives in West Virginia and I don't, but they're in Charleston in the pre-show leading up to the Jefferson Jackson Day live broadcast we did this past Saturday. One of the things that we talked about was the fact that Iran's religious leaders, the supreme spiritual dudes, the Ayatollah, have come out and said that the use of nuclear weapons is not consistent with Islamic law or Islamic teachings. and has directed the president and et cetera to not develop nuclear weapons. However, here in the United States, Shrubby, the stupid guy there in D.C., the stupid guy, you know, he is still hell-bent on invading Iran, even so much so that he's not even willing to participate in talks. According to a story from Reuters this afternoon, France, Britain, and Germany would be willing to begin talks with Iran even if it has not suspended its nuclear enrichment program first, but Washington would not take part. Der Spiegel, the German magazine, reported this over the weekend. So far, Iran has refused to suspend its uranium enrichment program, which would refine uranium for atom bombs. Could refine uranium for atom bombs. But it only says its nuclear fuel ambitions are limited to fueling power stations. Citing unnamed German diplomatic sources, the weekly magazine Der Spiegel said the goal of this new strategy would be to lure Tehran to the negotiating table to discuss a package of incentives offered by the six world powers in June in exchange for a suspension of Iran's uranium enrichment program. The six powers that made the offer to Iran, that would be the U.S., France, Russia, China, Britain, and Germany, said that the package was negotiable but conditioned any negotiations on a suspension of enrichment. Okay? So despite the ruling spiritual leaders in Iran who are saying that the use... of course, we haven't had the Pope hadn't come out and said that, has he? If Jerry Falwell isn't coming out and saying the Christian religion dictates that we don't use nuclear bombs, you don't hear James Dobson saying that. But the leader of the Islamic faith in Iran has said that. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Now. We have dealt with a number of different things this afternoon. Here's another story that I wanted to bring to your attention also, sort of like along the lines of the corruption that's going on. You know, it's not limited to just the United States. Apparently some British soldiers have been caught smuggling stolen guns out of Iraq and allegedly exchanging them for cocaine and cash on the black market. Security officials confirmed this weekend that soldiers from the 3rd Battalion, the Yorkshire Regiment, are at the center of a criminal inquiry by the RMP, the Royal Military Police, into a guns for cocaine network. Their alleged involvement with organized crime is a fresh blow to the British Army after a week in which a corporal from the Duke of Lancaster's regiment admitted he had committed a war crime against an Iraqi civilian. Although drug use is increasing in the armed forces, this is the first time military police have evidence that stolen weapons are being sold to pay for them. One of the first soldiers from the regiment to have been arrested is alleged to have bought drugs by trading handguns, including Glock pistols, smuggled from Iraq to Germany on at least six different occasions. Some of the weapons had been exchanged for about 50 grams of cocaine with a street value of 2,500 pounds. Of course, that's British currency. The drugs were sold to other British soldiers serving in Iraq. Addiction rears its ugly head, doesn't it? And as time goes on, I'm sure there will be a hell of a lot more to that story. Okay. Now, if you were around over the end of last week and over the weekend, you know, you may have seen something scrolling across the bottom of your screen on your television that said, French media claiming that Osama bin Laden is dead. Felt like an October surprise, didn't it? Except for it's September. However, Saudi Arabia is saying today that it had no, or yesterday, that it had no evidence, has no evidence that Osama bin Laden has died. shedding further doubt on a secret document leaked in France that said Saudi secret services believed he had died last month. France and the United States said this weekend they could not confirm the report in the French regional daily L'Est Républicain, I guess I'm saying that right, which quoted France's DGSE, Foreign Intelligence Services, saying the Saudi secret services were convinced that the Al-Qaeda leader had died of typhoid in Pakistan in late August. Time magazine separately posted an article on its website citing an unidentified Saudi source who claimed bin Laden was stricken with a waterborne disease and may already be dead. The Saudi embassy in Washington, however, has issued a statement saying, quote, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has no evidence to support recent media reports that Osama bin Laden is dead. Information that has been reported otherwise is purely speculative and cannot be independently verified. Somewhere in the world, Osama is sitting down saying, the reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on the show today, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. You can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. I'll be right back after this break.
Michael Franti, Lettucey and LZ in the place. Gone International with Sly and Robbie on the track. Drums and bass.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network. What's Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is Head On with Bob Kincaid.
The only hope that George Bush had after he raped the Treasury, after he ripped us off, the only hope he had for balancing out the amount of bad paper that he had to go and hang in China was to take control of the means by which China would receive oil. Iraq is one of the faucets. The other faucet is Iran. If he can control those two things, he can continue to hang bad paper on China, and on the other end, act as the dealer outside the schoolyard to China's little junkie. Does this make sense?
It makes perfect sense, but I haven't heard it said in that concise a manner. Nobody has made the loop so small that everybody can realize.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, only at headonradionetwork.com and radiopower.org.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Hello, Bruce.
Hello, Bruce.
Hello, Bruce.
Hello,
tell you where I'm coming from. You've done a lot of yelling pointed at my eardrum. I'll offer all of me that you can lay your eyes on.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. It's about 20 minutes past the hour here in the eastern United States. I got another couple of little things I wanted to bring to your attention. But before I do that, I wanted to get this story out because to me, this is a huge thing. Okay. I'm just going to read you this article because I want you to hear everything that this woman has to say regarding Bush and him seeking immunity for violating the War Crimes Act. This is by Elizabeth Holtzman. 32 years ago, President Gerald Ford created a political firestorm by pardoning former President Richard Nixon of all crimes he may have committed in Watergate, and he lost his election as a result. Now President Bush, to avoid a similar public outcry, is quietly trying to pardon himself of any crimes connected with the torture and mistreatment of U.S. detainees. The pardon is buried in Bush's proposed legislation to create a new kind of military tribunal for cases involving top al-Qaeda operatives. The pardon provision has nothing to do with the tribunals. Instead, it guts the War Crimes Act of 1996, a federal law that makes it a crime, in some cases punishable by death, to mistreat detainees in violation of the Geneva Conventions, and makes the new weaker terms of the War Crimes Act retroactive to 9/11. Press accounts of the provision have described it as providing immunity for CIA interrogators. But its terms cover the president and other top officials because the act applies to any U.S. national. Avoiding prosecution under the War Crimes Act has been an obsession of this administration since shortly after 9/11. In a January 2002 memorandum to the president, then White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez pointed out that the problem of prosecution for detainee mistreatment under the War Crimes Act. He notes that given the vague language of the statute, no one could predict what future prosecutors and independent counsels might do if they decided to bring charges under the act. As an author of the 1978 Special Prosecutor Statute, I know that independent counsels, who used to be called special prosecutors prior to the statute's reauthorization in 1994, independent counsels aren't for low-level government officials such as CIA interrogators. They are for the president and his cabinet. It is clear that Gonzalez was concerned about top administration officials. That's right, El Torturador Gonzalez also understood that the specter of prosecution could hang over top administration officials involved in detainee mistreatment throughout their lives. Because there is no statute of limitations in cases where death resulted from the mistreatment, prosecutors far into the future, not appointed by Bush or beholden to him, would be making the decisions about whether to prosecute. To reduce the threat of domestic criminal prosecution under the War Crimes Act, Gonzalez recommended that Bush not apply the Geneva Conventions to al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Since the War Crimes Act carried out the Geneva Conventions, Gonzalez reasoned that if the conventions didn't apply, neither did the War Crimes Act. And Bush implemented that recommendation on February the 7th, 2002. When the Supreme Court recently decided that the conventions did apply to al-Qaeda and Taliban detainees, the possibility of criminal liability for a high-level administration official reared its ugly head again. What to do? The administration has apparently decided to secure immunity from prosecution through legislation. Under cover of the controversy involving the military tribunals and whether they could use hearsay or coerced evidence, the administration is trying to pardon itself, hoping that no one will notice. The urgent timetable has more to do has more has to excuse me the urgent timetable has to do more than anything with the possibility that the next Congress may be controlled by Democrats who will not permit such a provision to be adopted. Creating immunity retroactively for violating the law sets a terrible precedent. The president takes an oath of office to uphold the Constitution. That document requires him to obey the laws, not violate them. A president who knowingly and deliberately violates U.S. criminal laws should not be able to use stealth tactics to immunize himself from liability. And Congress should not go along. That is an article that I read today. You can find that on Common Dreams by Elizabeth Holtzman, a former New York congresswoman, and is the co-author with Cynthia L. Cooper of a book entitled The Impeachment of George W. Bush, A Practical Guide for Concerned Citizens. Why I'm talking about this is because, well, it's obvious, isn't it? The stupid guy is trying to create the atmosphere so that, you know what? So that anything that he does, he will be found immune from prosecution. What can we do about this? Well, that's a good idea. That's a good question, and I will research this. Unless they've already passed the bill when I wasn't looking. It is a damn shame that this president, who cannot follow the law, would try to create new law to cover up for the fact that he didn't follow the law in the first place. I was sitting back the other day, and I was thinking about this very thing, and I was thinking, how can I tell my, yeah, matter of fact, this morning I was on the way to take one of my other children to school, listening to NPR, and it came across the news about the detainee and the laws and all the stuff that he hasn't followed, and I thought to myself, how can I tell my kids that you have to follow the law if the President of the United States doesn't even do it? How could I tell my kids that what you have to do is you have to live a moral, upright life and obey the laws of the land, because we are a nation of laws, not of men? And every morning in the news, there's another story coming out about George W. Bush and the laws that he's not following. That's a great family value there, isn't it, George? Great family value. Yeah, right along the side with the other one, torture. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, torture. That's another great family value, isn't it? Value voters, those Jerry Falwell types, those value voters. Since when did torture become a value? Since when did lying and breaking the law become a value? Since when did eavesdropping and spying illegally on American citizens become a value? As my good friend Bob says, and how free are you today? This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. 1-877-443 is the number, or excuse me, 1-877-443-2366 is the number if you want to get in on the show. I'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also listen to over at progressive.org. Let's go back in time, way back to 2003, when George Bush boasted of shutting down Saddam's torture rooms. Well, guess what? Those torture rooms have reopened under new management, and they appear to be doing a brisk business. Manfred Nowak heads the Human Rights Office of the UN in Iraq. He says the situation's so bad, many people say it's worse than it has been in the times of Saddam Hussein. His office reports that bodies show signs of beatings with electrical cables, burns caused by chemical substances, electricity, and cigarettes, and wounds caused by power drills and nails. The victims have been found in prisons run by the U.S. as well as those run by the Iraqi government, says the U.N. report, and private militias are engaging in the most brutal tortures, it adds. Baghdad itself is the scene of record-breaking violence, and civilians all over the country are dying at an appalling pace. 6,599 Iraqi civilians died violently in Iraq just in July and August. This is the Iraq that George Mission Accomplished Bush and Dick last throws Cheney and Donald Stuff Happens Rumsfeld have bestowed upon the people of Iraq. What a disgrace. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 33 minutes past the hour, and we are in the downhill slope of the show today. I hope you have been enjoying the stories that I've been bringing to your attention. I've got a couple of business-related stories I wanted to, well, you know what, I'm going to skip those. I think I'm just going to skip those. I'm looking at them going, I don't want to talk about these businesses, these corporations. I don't want to talk about them. So I'm not going to. So I'm not going to. We were talking about unions earlier, and I really kind of wanted to drive this point home. And I don't know how much more I could, how much harder I could drive the point home. Here in the U.S., in the time before Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in the time before Teddy Roosevelt, or probably right around the same time as Teddy. We had companies that ruled through the point of a gun. There were many owners of some of these companies. I'm thinking George Hearst is one who owned gold mines South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, some of these other places. Where some of the workers tried to unionize, and he brought in the Pinkertons to bust up the union organization, killed a lot of the leaders. You know, the union movement in this country has been fraught with an incredible amount of violence. People have been strung up, they've been shot, they've been beaten. And the government of a number of states and cities participated very much in trying to keep unions from organizing. Many feared the organization of unions as being something that would be a would bring about a socialist state in the United States? Indeed, many of the early union members were socialists or anarchists. And they saw themselves as creating an organization to try to keep the negative effects, the violence, the exploitation of capitalism, to try to hold it at bay. And as a result, many regulations were implemented, through a lot of fighting and a lot of bloodshed and a lot of mothers losing their husbands, children losing their fathers. The union movement took hold in the United States. It created an entirely different paradigm for a society. And that paradigm, that idea was, of course, as I mentioned before, the great American middle class. In years past, in a lot of other countries, I'm thinking Britain specifically, there wasn't really a middle class. There was an upper class and a lower class. Here in the United States, probably the middle of the 1800s forward, you know, actually from the inception of our country forward until probably the 40s, there wasn't really a middle class, at least not a widespread middle class. And today, as we look back, the middle class is shrinking. Wealth is being concentrated into the hands of a few who do own the corporations, who are in power, who are the propertied aristocratic fellows, who believe that they're doing you a favor by letting you work for them. And yet what we find is that indeed union membership is going down. Well, there's a number of reasons for that. One of the reasons that union membership is going down is because we have a situation in this country where the laws that are in place to try to protect the American worker are no longer there. See, it's just fine for those in power, the Republicans and some of the elitist bankruptcy bill voting Democrats. It's okay with them if we end up all working at Walmart, as long as they get voted back into office. That's all they care about. There's no sacrifice there. The great American middle class was built on the blood of men who died trying to fight for workers' rights. And yes, today there are many, probably I would say even as many as 70% of us don't think about that when we take a vacation day. We don't think about that when we take off for Labor Day. We don't think about that when we take off for May the 1st, if you take off for May the 1st, which is actually closer to a labor holiday than the actual Labor Day in September. We don't think about the people like Joe Hill, who was the victim of violence because of his union organizing. And as a result, our history is lost. Well, we have to bring that history back, I believe. You know, I love to listen to Dr. Bill O'Brien's show here on the network because he brings history alive. He brings history alive in such a way that we cannot refute the realities of our past. And because if we forget the realities of our past, as the saying goes, we are doomed to repeat it. I fear, ladies and gentlemen, I fear that we are in that time right now where we are doomed to repeat the past because we've forgotten the lessons of the robber baron days. The lessons of the robber baron days was corporations absolutely have to be regulated, and there has to be protections in place for workers. And if the labor union movement has done nothing else, it has created that and made that a reality for many workers. Well, now with the shrinkage, if you will, of the labor union movement in the United States, those protections are going away, aren't they? I hear more and more stories of people getting fired because of workplace-related accidents. I hear more and more stories of people being fired because, or women being fired because, oh, they're pregnant. I hear more and more stories of violence and bloodshed still going on today surrounding people who are trying to organize, for instance, the Smithfield meatpacking plant down in Tar Heel, North Carolina. They've been fighting to get a union in there for years, and for years violence has been perpetrated upon the people who are trying to organize it. Because, see, the powers that be don't want to have the workers be on an equal footing with them. They don't want to equalize the playing field. What they want to do is sock more money away and go buy a yacht so they can sit out in the Gulf of Mexico and laugh and smoke big fat cigars and enjoy the fruits of your labor, not of their own. So, yeah, you know, maybe on another show in the next couple of weeks I'll try to focus on some labor history, and let's get into the meat of some of this stuff and talk about some of the origins of where of the 40-hour work week, for example, or of the week vacation that many people get every year, or perhaps, you know, of child labor laws. Because, see, all these laws, they weren't put into place because somebody said, oh, you know what, I think we should outlaw working for, you know, the children working. No, they didn't do that, because what they did was, you know, the labor union movement forced these onto the books, these laws, because kids were getting killed in textile plants and in other plants. And today we're faced with another crisis that is adding another layer to the labor issue, and that is the influx of undocumented immigrants. The labor union movement, a lot of the labor union movement believes that the best thing to do is to allow them here, and let's unionize them, let's organize them, let's bring up the labor price in a short-term way. I don't know. I'd like to hear what you might have to say on this topic. Let's go ahead and straight over to the phone lines. Let's pick up Wayne. Wayne on line one. Wayne, how you doing today, man?
Good, Bruce. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. Good to hear from you.
It's good to talk to you. Well, I see you got back safely, apparently.
I did indeed. I got back very safely, and it you know what? It rained all the way through West Virginia. When the minute I hit the North Carolina line, the sun came out.
Huh? What is that? And a message?
I don't know.
Or something?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I have to ponder that for a while. Listen, you're talking
it's just
about
what happened.
History,
huh?
Labor history.
Yes.
And you know, what are the in? History is so very important because we have to be able to study history in order to be informed of what they've done. I mean, I'm talking about union people and union organizers, about how they've accomplished the things they've accomplished. And one very interesting thing, in Sweden, 83% of the workforce is represented by a union because the laws in Sweden prevent the employer from interfering with the unionization process. Okay, unlike U.S. workers, Swedish workers have the right to associate and bargain collectively. In 1948, the UN's Declaration of Human Rights under Article 20 was passed. Everyone has the right to freedom of peaceful assembly and association. And it's explained in the UN International Labor Organization Convention number 87, Freedom of Association and Right to Organize. which established the right of all workers to form and join organizations of their own choosing without prior authorization. Okay, now, although 118 countries have ratified Convention Number 87, the U.S. Senate has steadfastly refused to do so. Now, this is since 1948. Now, what that means is that when you have a union, if you have a union campaign going, the company that you're campaigning against could put anti-union posters all over the factory or wherever you're at. They can hold captive audience meetings. But the people on the union have no right. They can't put posters up on the walls because they don't own the walls. When you walk into the workplace, your right to freedom of speech and assembly, are you give that up when you walk through the doors, because the United States has never ratified Convention Number 87. Now think about that. And these are all the countries that we supposedly compete with have signed this: Japan, France, Germany. Now, since 1948, we have not ratified that. And that's one of the, you know.
Which says that not only have Republican Congresses not done it, but also Democratic Congresses.
Well, exactly. This isn't, you know, I don't know who brought it up here. Was it you last week or something? You know, it's not about Republican or Democrat. It's about class.
Yeah.
That's what it is, you know, and... you know, Limbaugh, you want to call it class warfare? Well, that's what the hell it is. And, you know, we're really getting beat up by you guys, and you're not playing fair. You know, so there's, well, I hope to, I hope you continue discussing things like this, because labor and labor history are very important things. And, you know, we're seeing the result of, well, their campaign that's been going on, obviously, for quite some time, and on both sides of the aisle. You know, so people have to start standing up. And, you know, I still think we got a better shot with the Democrats, you know. It's just a matter of, we need to change things around. I mean, if we were in the situation we were in right now, and the Democrats were in and were doing the same things that the Republicans are doing, I would be fighting them just as hard. I mean, you know, this... Well, everything. I mean, the war and this guy trying to get the, that lady was just talking about, you know, they're trying to save their butts.
Yeah, they're trying to keep them going to prison.
Exactly. They should be going to prison. And the people got to wake up and see what's going on. And, you know, and that has to happen. Well, I think a big part of that can come from the labor movement. That's where it's come from in the past, you know. And then we get control, we could change, you know, part of the problem to the immigration problem is to go back and change some of these trade agreements that we've made, or eliminate them and start over again, so that they do in fact raise the standard of living for our trade partners, not exploit them worse than we can exploit people here. But they're, you know, that's what their whole thing's all about. They want to be able to exploit everyone.
That's
every
right.
United States worker, any worker. Workers are just, well, it's class warfare, pal.
It's class
I'm
warfare.
Sorry, that's what the hell it is. So, but we have to fight back. That's all right.
Well, and, you know, and we're doing it slowly. I mean, I think that's the other part of this, too, is to keep in mind that the pendulum swings, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And I, you know, I have to think that the pendulum is swinging in our way and that we are starting to get momentum. And, you know, just like a snowball going down the hill, pal, you know, and...
Let's hope it busts up all those electronic voting machines at the bottom of the hill, right?
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. And just, you know, I don't know what. We can make a monument out of them somewhere.
That's right.
And, you know, just a big pile of them and, you know... Put a sign. This didn't work.
Right next to the Atari.
Paper ballots. All right. Trust in your exit poll.
Faith-based electioneering. Yeah.
No. Anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and I will. I'll try to bring this up every, you know, and make this a regular topic. I mean, you know, there's so much, there are so many wonderful stories and very enthralling stories out of the creation of the labor union movement, Wayne, that I think that we would be remiss in not making mention of them as we go through the year, you know?
Well, and, you know, it's not just like real labor history, too. I mean, it's about the history of how the upper class, I mean, they knew what they were doing all along. You know, Washington and Franklin and you know, all them people, they were, you know, oh, yeah, great heroes. They were blah, 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 blah. They also took very good care of themselves. You know, they were granted, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres, and they passed laws and made deals that, you know, hey, any indentured servants you got over there you want to send over. And then, you know, we did the thing with Africa and the trade thing, and, you know. I mean, the whole history is there of exploiting workers from the very beginning.
From the very beginning.
So, but anyway, we're going to change that. I think, you know, I really think a lot of people are upset. I hope they're upset. I'm so upset that with the religious community that more people aren't coming out and absolutely going crazy over this, you know, we need to be allowed to torture people, or we need you to change the law so that you can't hold me responsible for any damn thing I've done in the last going on 6 years. Where are these people? Torture is wrong. And I mean, it's just that simple. You know, Jesus Christ was tortured. And like I told you before, he would even fit into Gonzalez's thing. You know, I mean, I think he had organ failure and he died. So it even falls under his classification. And he supposedly asked God to forgive these people because they knew not what they know not what they do. Well, this guy knows not what he does either. And I, you know, you could forgive him if you want, but get him the hell out of office and stop.
All right, let's get him out of there first, and then we can worry about whether we're going to forgive him or not.
Forgive is up to you. But we have to do something to save our country. We have to get, my God, torture.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. It's unbelievable that we're even having this conversation,
Wayne. The debate is even happening. I mean, you know, somebody should have stood up in the first thing and said, are you out of your damn mind? You know, take him out of the room. I'm telling you, they should have made him baseball commissioner. We should have arranged that. I mean, just think of what we'd have saved the world.
Yeah, I know it.
See? Listen, buddy, I'm going to get off of here.
All right. Well, thank you, Wayne, for calling in. Let's we'll keep going with it.
Okay.
Got to take this country back, man.
Yes, we do. First thing we got to do is be able to talk to each other when we go to work. There's a major step.
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
Thank you a lot, Wayne. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Okay, man. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay. That's our good friend Wayne from up in the mountain state of West Virginia, a union organizer in his own right. Let's go straight to Sarge on line two. You only got a couple minutes left, Sarge. How you doing, man?
Not doing too good today, man. Have you read my column?
No, I haven't.
Man, it's a sad story. There is a disease that has been...
Oh, Morgulon. Yeah, I did read that earlier. Yes, I did.
And I talked to my contact down in Jackson County, and they said it was a far worse case of it than is being reported. There are other diseases that have yet to even reach the news. And it's pathetic, man. It's sick. And even as far up as here, I'm starting to see people getting sick from diseases that nobody's ever had. So it's just this administration is just driving us crazy. They're killing us, and it's not just going to be the people here. It's going to be everywhere if we don't stand up and Americans don't say, hey, enough is enough. And even the Democrats in this state have started covering up some of this stuff.
That's
So I am so depressed today. I just really don't know what to do. I hope
is it being documented? I mean, are these people, you know, I read your article, and the people who want to read that, they can go to powersandmorrison.com and click on the old Sarge. But are the news stations at least documenting that down there?
No, Mississippi Press is the only one I know of that carried the story. I've called the Center of Disease Control today. I called the governor's office. I called Pelosi's office. I called Rangel's office. I made five different phone calls today, and all of them would not take my call. And they were going. Oh, I left messages for them to call me back, and not a one has returned a call.
It's a damn shame, Sarge.
And it, like I said, it's not okay. One of my contacts has had her vehicle vandalized. They're ganging up on her. The governor has investigated her. They have taken her ID and changed her ID when she went to get her tires replaced. Her Sears card had been changed, and they would not tell her under what name her Sears card was now. That's what's going on.
That's just crazy.
It just gets worse. Just gets worse. Okay, I know you're on a short time.
Do me a favor when you get off the line tonight. Sit down, take a deep breath, and remember that we're in this for the right reasons. We're in this fight for the right reasons, and that there's people coming behind you, you know, who need you in the fight, my friend.
Well, I have seen the dark times before too, and they didn't get me that time. They're not gonna get me now, Bruce.
All right.
Okay, I'm gonna let you go, buddy, and thanks for all you do.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarge. Glad you're there, my friend.
Bye bye.
Bye now. And that was our good friend Sarge from Jackson County, or from down in southern Mississippi. You need to read his blog today. Go to powersandmorrison.com and read up on the his blog is the old Sarge. So go, please do read that, because there's a story there that is particularly heinous. And I'll try to do some digging and see what I can come up with on that one tomorrow. Glad to be back with you again this afternoon. We are rapidly descending, so you might want to buckle your seatbelts, put all your cigarettes out, turn off your electronic devices. Today's program was produced by our good friend Zach Rebich, and was engineered by John Fox, who is also the chief announcer of this radio program. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services is our IT professional, and what a wonderful job he does. Dean is our head-on headlines news ninja. Hi-ya! Thank you, Gene, for all that you do, my friend, and keeping our posting going on over at headonradionetwork.com. Ben Birch of the White Rose Society archives this radio program and also manages the streams for the Head On Radio Network. Shelby LePre simulcasts this radio program over at radiopower.org. And thank you very much, Shelby, for doing that for us here at the Head On Radio Network. I also want to thank the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Those guys are building the American dream one nail at a time. That's true labor at work, folks. And they're supporting this network, which means that they believe in America, because this is America's liberal voice. Also want to thank the mods over at the Head On Radio Network chat room. Those guys are hard working over there this evening. Last but not least, thank you, listener, for joining me this afternoon for a little trip down the progressive path here on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. And don't forget, it's your democracy, too, and it's not a spectator sport. This has been Bruce Birch. I will see you tomorrow. The sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be all right. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And
out of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the...
This is the Quality News Network. The Army has extended the combat tours for about 4,000 soldiers. They were scheduled to return to their home base in Germany in early January, but have now been told they won't return until at least late February. They're operating in the Anbar province, one of the most violent areas of the country. There are now 142,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. About 120,000 of them are Army soldiers. In Washington today, several retired military officers criticized Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld as being incompetent and called for him to be replaced. They accused him of sending U.S. troops without the proper equipment and hiding facts from the public. Also in Washington, congressional Democrats are calling for a new direction in the war on terrorism. That's after the revelation of parts of the national intelligence estimate over the weekend. In Basra today, British troops reportedly killed a top al-Qaeda leader who had escaped from a U.S. prison in Afghanistan last year. He was shot to death in an early morning raid in Iraq's second largest city. Despite an appeal by Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki for peace during Ramadan, the violence continues. Dozens of Iraqis were killed over the weekend, as well as two U.S. Marines who died in the Anbar province. That raises the number of U.S. military deaths in Iraq to more than 2,700. In Baghdad today, the new chief judge in Saddam Hussein's genocide trial threw the former Iraqi president out of court. His defense lawyers were already boycotting the court proceedings. In the Palestinian territories, talks scheduled for today between rivals Hamas and Fatah have been called off. Fatah head Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas planned to meet with Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh of Hamas, but the trip has been postponed and no new date has been set. In San Diego today, three Camp Pendleton Marines were